It's time for Intersections, where art and science meet, your weekly hour of conversation, where you learn about curious ideas, creative works, and interesting phenomena with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Now, it's time for Intersections, where art and science meet.
I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversations. In today's conversation, we're going to be talking about time-lapse photography. And it's a technique in which the frequency at the frames are captured is lower than the frequency used to view the sequence. And we'll make more sense out of that here in a little bit with our guest. And with me today is Shiv Verma, who's an author, a photographer, artist, educator, deals a lot with technology. Welcome, Shiv.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your program. As I can see, you've got a bright, sunny background, and I'm kind of more on a cloudy situation where I am.
Oh, too bad. Sometimes it's really beautiful. And I love that. And this was a photograph I just took with my iPhone because I was just out on the beach. But I know a lot about what you are attempting to do in terms of time lapse. And so what you're doing, if you could explain to people, what is it that you're able to do within the camera that in some way is able to change time different than what we as humans can interpret?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting you asked that question. But before we actually talk about what time lapse is, I think we need to really address a fundamental problem that we as human beings have, and it stems from, to some extent, the fact that we fundamentally are very impatient. And our impatience leads to us missing a lot of things. So I always, you know, try and sort of set this as an example. Children are very impatient. And it's very clear that as we grow older, we tend to become even more impatient. And with the fact that, you know, impatience is something that leads you to not see what you otherwise may have wanted to see. And though time can't really be seen, the activity or what transpires in time can in fact be seen, but we don't see it. And you know, I pose this as an example to people. They say, you know, they go and admire a pretty flower. And if you ask them a question, which is, have you ever seen a flower bloom? And they kind of look at you and say, well, why would I want to do that? I mean, I can see the flower as the end result. Well, that end result had a lot of things transpire before it actually happened as that end result. And if you could conceptualize that, you could probably say, yes, it was a bud, and then the bud opened, and then the bud became a flower. But you never really get to see it. But if there was a way to take that and process it in such a manner that you could take all of that time, maybe a whole day from when it was a bud to when it became a flower, and demonstrate that activity in a few seconds, you eliminate the problem of patience because you don't have to worry about it. It's just a very short period of time, and you get the essence of the activity that happened or that transpired for you to be able to see the end result. And you can extend this into you know, not just a flower. You can extend it into various, you know, other activities or various other things that take place. I mean, it's, you know, a sunrise or a sunset takes about an hour and a half. But who has the patience to sit and stare? Well, some people do, and particularly where you live, You know, I notice people go to the beach and then they watch the sunset. But in reality, if you were to watch the sunset and then, you know, the sky go dark and then the stars come out, all of that is a lot of time. And we as human beings don't want to necessarily spend that time for, quote, I hate to say this, but mundane things. But if that all that can be compressed, and really that's what time lapse is all about, is the ability to take extensive periods of time and compress it into some tangible period that can be seen, understood, and realized. So if you start looking at it from that point of view, and you go back to the point where I say children have very little patience, but if you could show a child, you know, the germination of a seed, well, they could experiment with that at home and, you know, plant a seed in a bit of cotton wool or some tissue paper in a glass tube and watch it. But they don't watch the entire sequence. They don't watch how it really all happens. And if you were to capture that in, you know, frames, as I call them, and then put those frames together in a compressed means, then they can actually see what transpired and how did it happen? How did the seed, you know, sprout, and how did the little, you know, plant grow, and how did the leaves come out, and all that good stuff. So it becomes an inordinately powerful education tool. So it's nothing more than taking vast amounts of time and compressing them so that we can digest it very quickly. And, you know, whether it be education, whether it be memories, whether it be activities that otherwise would never be seen, can be visualized.
You know, that's just really a great way of describing what you're doing. For one, you're right about patience. Even if we could just sit there and stare for a day at a bud turning into a flower, our mind would drift. We would miss things. We'd quit staring, we'd fall asleep probably. We couldn't do that. And so what you're talking about really is using an instrument, in this case, a camera, to take shots periodically, right, along the way. And then it keeps staring at it because it doesn't get bored. And it right. keeps doing right. what it's programmed to do. And then you take that and you move the frame rate to a normal frame rate so that it's motion, and you end up with this incredible, right, way of seeing what we are is right in front of us all the time, but we can't, you know, we can't slow down enough or long enough to see it. And I think you're right. It's an amazing educational tool.
Yeah. So, I think more and more as we sort of realize the value proposition of time lapse, you know, it can become, you know, part of the class curriculum for, you know, whether it be pre-K, whether it be, yeah. you know, because you never can really get the essence of something that really takes a long time to happen, right? And then if you can capture it this way, then it's a repeatable process. I mean, you can go back and say, oh, what happened then? And you can sort of, you know, play it back, reverse it, go forward, and see that happen. And more importantly, what's even more interesting is that given the fact that it is individual frames that are then compiled into a video, you can further speed it up or slow it down as need be. So, you know, you have a lot of flexibility in not only the way you capture it, but the way you play it back.
Yeah, and you know, I'm thinking of myself, and I bet our listeners are thinking of times where they've seen a time-lapse segment. And I'm thinking of one where a seed growing, right? And we don't know which side is up or down. Some people do, biologists, some people know. But it's weird when it's upside down, the plant will still send its root up and then down over time. And you see that in a time lapse. And you're going, right. How does it know to do? You know, so you're at what you're saying is that it fundamentally helps us to ask some really deeper questions, which is how did that seed know to send the root down and stem up, even though it was upside down?
Yeah. So, you know, you put that in as a question, how, and that's what time-lapse tries to answer. But not in its biological way, but in a visual way. Right. And so to that very, very, very thing, as a time-lapse photographer or a time-lapse producer, I would say, you know, that's a great experiment. So let's take four seeds and orient them in four different ways in the same, you know, sort of plane of, you know, sort of visual plane, and let them all grow, and let's see how they determine which way to do it. So here's, you know, and I think it's these questions that lead to the creation of different kinds of time lapse. You know, anytime somebody has a question that is time extended, you try and sort of in your head say, well, how do you compress it so that it becomes valid from a visual point of view and can be seen quickly, you know?
Right. I wanted to, because I have a museum background, and what I do with Da Vinci Pursuit besides this radio show is I wanted to do a thing about rotting, you know, vegetables rotting. And I wanted to put aquariums around in front of different museums that had like pumpkins and squash and other things in there. Then they would be put in there fresh. We'd have a time-lapse camera on it. But then people would go by and they'd wonder what was going on here, but they could tune in, you know, go online and tune in and see what happened over days, the whole process. And I think it would be really interesting to see, have people look at this and go, why did they have this stuff here? And then all of a sudden it's in different stages and they're not going to come back every day and look, but they can come back and look and, oh my gosh, that it made this soup.
Well, then you could also play it back in time to go from rot to fresh.
Exactly. And you could stop anywhere along there and say, well, when did the flies invade? Or when did, you know, that's the thing. It's just such a cool idea that you have of doing that. So what you're doing in the camera is simply, right, it's not so simple, but it is partly now that you're just taking that time, a snapshot every once in a while.
Yes.
And how do you determine the frequency of what on different shots?
Well,
you want to take that image.
There's a few factors. Some of it comes with experimentation for new things, and some of it just becomes pretty obvious as to how you would do it. But, you know, I go back to my original, you know, thing about being patient and not being patient. And what is our, I don't want to call it a standard, but what is our attention span?
Right.
And if you were to ask somebody, well, you know, what is your attention span? They kind of look at you and wonder, you know, what kind of question is that? But, you know, over time, we all have kind of understood that a normal attention span for a human being is between 10 and 15 seconds.
Wow.
And if you start going back and looking at movies, you know, whether it be old movies or new movies, look at the scene cuts that take place. You never see something which, unless it's a speech of some sort, but if there is more than one person and one person is doing all the talking, you'll still see the camera move from one person to the next and back again. And this back and forth typically transpires in about that 10 to 15 second time frame. So you can take all of that and say, well, our visual attention span is about 10 or 15 seconds. Now, I don't want to get into too much math about this, but our eyes can perceive motion over individual frames, as long as there's a slight amount of blur added to it, that we can perceive continuity at about 20 to 24 frames a second. And if we want it to be pretty smooth, then about 30 frames a second is an ideal kind of frame rate, as we call it. So movies are typically 24 or 30 frames a second. Some of it is attributable to, you know, the way our electric systems cycle through power and all that good stuff, but let's not go into that. But 30 frames a second is what we perceive to be smooth, natural-looking video. So if in 1 second you need 30 frames, then to do a 10-second attention span video, you need 300 frames.
Wow.
So as everything, you know, we give ourselves a little buffer back in front. So let's say you put a buffer of 50 frames in front and a buffer of 50 frames at the end. So you're looking at about 400 images or 400 frames of content that is required to create that 10-second video. So now you basically say, well, what is it that I'm capturing? And how long does it take in normal time? And if you were to take that normal time and divide it by 400, it would give you the duration between each frame. And all you ever really want is about 400 frames. So
if it's 12 hours, and you still only want 400 frames, right?
Right. And so you say, well, if a flower blooms in 12 hours, I need 400 frames. That's the gap I'm going to give.
Mm.
Now, if there is something that is very fast, happening in, you know, rapid duration, you know, being much shorter than what you typically end up calculating, then yes, you can double it and you end up with twice the number of frames, but then you play it back at twice the speed to make it look more, you know, visually natural. So that's really the format of what I call the math involved in creating time lapse. I mean, people have done, you know, incredible time lapses of, you know, building a home, or, you know, people have done time lapses of a full pregnancy. You know, there's a lady who actually stood in the same place in her room and captured an image, you know, of herself once every, I think it was a week or once every month or whatever, and created a time lapse of her growing from a teenager to an adult. So, you know, people have come up with incredible time lapses. But, you know, as far as time is concerned, as long as you're cognizant of the fact that your playback rate needs to be visually comfortable, you're okay. 400 frames, 450 frames, you can make longer time lapses. But even when you do make longer time lapses, you need to break it up so that, again, you don't get into the situation where you have a bored audience.
Yeah, and your audience is going to have a lapse of attention.
Right. So right? So you combine.
And so you've got, even if you make it longer, they may not attend to it. So you're right.
Right, right. So, and you could make a time lapse movie, as I call it, which may be, you know, 10 minutes long or 5 minutes long, but it is a sequence of individual time lapses compiled,
sure,
just as you would, you know, a regular video or a regular TV show, where it is sequences of 10, 15 seconds each, where you can sort of keep the attention span. Because the moment you cut into a different scene, you re-trigger the patience factor of a human being. Huh. So then it becomes, you know, a repeat of different patience factors, and thereby you'd keep the attention span going.
That's really interesting. And I get a little bit of what you're talking about in terms of when I watch movies from an earlier time, not only even 100 years ago or 90 years ago, it was much slower. It felt slower.
Yes.
And today, I think that we've raised that at, you know, the time faster, you know, than when you're in a movie in the sequence, and it feels the old ones feel really slow, which sometimes is nice, but it's also, you get a jolt. You kind of go, wow, this right. is a lot. Why don't they get to the point? It's really interesting. Exactly what you're talking about is that frame of mind that we live in. Do you get a sense that that's accelerating among humans, that our time frame?
Oh, I definitely do. I definitely do believe that is happening. I mean, we want things to happen quickly. And, you know, whether you use the term faster or, you know, it's more get it over with. You know, let's get it over with. And that's really comes back to the thing of whether it's our reduction in the amount of time of patients, or it's just a natural need for things to transpire quickly. I mean, we are always striving for shorter duration, right? I mean, everything needs to be done yesterday. So I think the human nature is changing or is evolving towards speed, quicker, sooner, you know, all of those terms. And I think that applies to time lapse, it applies to film, it applies to television. We get tired of watching the same news, but yet we watch it because we're hoping for that one thing to happen, which might be different. Right. So.
Right. And we've gone to everything's breaking news, which we're waiting for something to be really breaking. So right. You're right. I think it's really interesting about us. I also think that what you're bringing to us with this is really an education tool. You mentioned that a little bit, but as an educator myself, an elementary teacher originally, the idea that young children can do some of this and they can capture a window of time and they can see things and discover things, it's going to make them more curious about the world.
Absolutely. And not only that, I mean, think about not necessarily pre-K, but, you know, children who are old enough to understand the value of an iPhone or an Android phone, right? Visualize a five-year-old, well, a five-year-old may be too young, but maybe 8 years old. All these tools, the phone as a tool, they have now time-lapse capabilities built into them. And children could actually start using this, not just as a means of communication, but as a means of education.
Yeah.
They themselves could start creating time lapses to be able to show others what happened. You know, I grew a plant. I mean, tell a parent that. The parent's going to say, yes, thank you. You grew a plant. Right. But now if the kid goes up to the parent and shows, you know, how the plant grew, be rest assured the parent gets educated. Because they've never seen it happen either.
No. And, you know, it's somebody repairing a car, just to photo, you know, it. How did they, you know, what happened? It would be really interesting. I've actually seen some time lapses now that you mentioned that are really interesting. Like somebody takes apart a camera and puts it back together and you watch that in time lapse. And that's pretty cool. All these little parts are going out and coming back. But you see things that you wouldn't see because of that. And I think that's interesting. One of the things, too, that you're talking about is cameras and photography really took us away from a little bit, sped up us seeing, because one of the way we did before photography, when we had large cameras as well, was that we had to do a lot of illustrating. So naturalists and people looking at nature had to sit still and draw and illustrate, and they were seeing a lot. Now I can jump out of a car to snap a picture and not really see, you know, not really look. And so what you're doing is you're talking about through time lapse would be helpful to people to slow down a little bit. Maybe not at the moment they take the picture, but later they can look back and they can see
it evolve. Yes. The thing that I'm not doing, but the converse of time lapse is high speed photography.
Right.
So there are things in our life that we don't see because it happens so fast.
So fast.
Right. And then when some things happen that fast. Yeah. Right. I mean, for example, you drop a glass and it breaks. You don't see how it broke. Mm-hmm. You know, where did those shards come out of? And, you know, where was the fracture, the first fracture point that happened? We don't see that. So, but if you were to do the reverse of time lapses, take very high speed frames and then compile them and slow it down, you'd be able to see how the glass broke.
Yeah.
So both aspects of time come into play. One is compressing it, and then the other one is expanding it so that you can see what happens very quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's the applicability of whether you want to call it time lapse and reverse lapse, but it is really what we don't see with our normal visual one patience and one the lack of ability to do it. And these are means of really demonstrating to what transpired and how it did and how really, you know, did it happen?
Yeah. And, you know, my wife's a veterinarian and she and I talk about this a lot of times. You know, people try to humanize animals but a lot of our animals, our dogs, for instance, have a different frame rate that their eye sees. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we'll wonder, my dog will bark at the television if it hears a noise, but it doesn't really notice it. It doesn't really see because those frames are wrong for it. And so yep. what's really interesting is other animals have different times frames that they use and can see things in time differently than humans. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. I think they think everybody's like us, but no.
But, you know, funny you bring that up because a lot of people will put the television on when they leave the house they say, my dog wants to watch TV.
Yeah, no.
But the dog doesn't want to watch TV. The dog's just listening to the sounds.
That's right.
And that's all they're doing. They that's can't right. really watch
right.
it. So, however, yeah, you're
absolutely however, right. cats can actually see it, which is interesting. And it could be silent and cats can actually watch it, which is just strange. But birds, you know, different bird species, they have different frame rates. They can see.
Yeah.
So it's really, I think it's really interesting, this issue of time and what's actually happening and how humans really have evolved. I think our survival, our evolutionary track was we didn't give a lot of time to looking in one spot because we were always worried that something was going to come from somewhere else. And we probably just evolved to be short timed in terms of our visual component.
And then comes, you know, the next aspect, whether it be, you know, time lapse or it be any kind of visual, is it attractive enough, or does it have a story, or does it have some meaning that will force the viewer to look at it? You know, yeah. Will they spend time seeing?
Do they care about what it is? Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there comes, you know, a time when you can create time lapses and nobody wants to see it because it's of no interest. You know, it may be of value, but it's of no interest.
Yeah, that's
and, you know, there's a big difference between the value proposition versus, you know, the interest.
Yeah.
And I think as time lapse creators, we all need to be cognizant of the fact that somebody can see a photograph in a millisecond, but to see the time lapse, it's now 10 seconds. And you know what? A millisecond is tolerable, but 10 seconds may not be.
That's really all fascinating. I'm talking with Shiv Verma about time lapse photography, and really we're starting to get into just time, and we'll be right back after this break.
Hello, Indiana. This is Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, host of Positively Politics. I'd like to invite you to join our conversation on the current issues and events in politics with the experts who know them best. Every Saturday morning here on WICR at 11:30, we break down the sometimes negative and often complicated world of politics in a nonpartisan, straightforward, and educationally rooted way. You won't want to miss the discussion on Positively Politics Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on The Diamond.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kiesling, and today I'm having a conversation with Shiv Verma about his work capturing time in the camera using advanced time-lapse techniques that can appear to slow time. And Shiv, I was asking you a little bit about how you do this, but let's back up just a little bit. I think you've got an idea about how we can introduce people to what is it we're attempting to do with this. So go ahead and describe that.
Yeah, so I think one of the key aspects of creating time lapse, and if your viewers or listeners want to try this at home, the first experiment in time lapse is fairly simple and can be done, and also be most interesting. For the end result that you get. And I think we all have ice cream in our freezers, and ice cream is great subject matter, because a dollop of ice cream or a scoop of ice cream typically takes about 1 hour to melt. Hmm. And at normal room temperatures,
right.
Summers are different, but at normal room temperatures, between 67 and 70 degrees at home, whether it be summer or winter, that's how we tend to keep our homes as far as internal temperature is concerned. So you can take some vanilla ice cream, and I think vanilla being the most common ice cream that we all have. And if you don't have food coloring, but if you do, all the better. And if you just take a scoop of ice cream and put it on a plate, preferably a white plate, so that you can see the effects, and put a few drops of food color, different food color, at various places on the ice cream, and that's your setup. So you know that it's going to take about 1 hour to melt, and at the end of that 1 hour, you should have some fairly interesting video available of what happened. Now, you can get into the intricacies of lighting it and things like that, but for the moment, just let's consider using natural light. And a camera that has to have just one incremental capability, or you need one incremental tool to do it with. The item is an intervalometer. And basically what an intervalometer does is you can program it, or you can tell it to take a picture once every so many seconds or once every so many minutes. And you can also tell it how many pictures to take. So as we were discussing before, is that we're going to basically end up creating a video. And the video is going to be played back at 30 frames a second. So we need, for every 1 second of time lapse, we need 30 frames. So if we're going to do 30 frames a second and we need, let's say, 10 seconds of video, we're going to have 300 frames. So 1 hour being 60 minutes multiplied by 60 seconds divided by 300 will give you the number of frames that you need to capture. So you set this intervalometer to say capture, just as an example, if you were to do 1 minute intervals, you'd only have 60 frames in that 1 hour. If you were to do it at 30 second intervals, you'd have 120. And if you were to do it at every 15 seconds. So hypothetically, very quickly, we can ascertain that maybe 10 seconds is a good thing. So we want to take one image every 10 seconds. That's really all the intervalometer is doing. The rest of the camera settings are really based upon the capabilities of your camera. Does it have good ISO? Does it have So you set your shutter speed and your aperture, etc. Or you can put it into aperture priority. And there are reasons why we shouldn't. And that's getting into more technicalities. But on a very fundamental kind of concept, your exposure has to be correct for where that ice cream is placed. You need to focus your camera on that bit of ice cream manually, because what you don't want is during this 60-minute period for your camera to constantly try and refocus because your autofocus is on. So you want to make sure that as far as possible, all your camera settings are manually in your control, not in the control of the camera. And the only controlling element is your intervalometer. Now, there are cameras that are available that actually have built-in intervalometers. You don't have to buy an external device. But if your camera doesn't have an external, an internal intervalometer, you can get one for about $40-odd. And it plugs into the remote control port of your camera. So now you can program that. And it'll all it's really doing is, at a very constant interval basis, it triggers the camera to take an image. So it captures image after image after image. And now you've got your 300 or 400 images. And you bring those images into some form of editing software. But interestingly enough, these cameras that have built-in intervalometers also are capable of compiling video in the camera itself. So the camera will generate, you know, a
time-lapse,
not the finest video, right? quality, but a right. reasonably good video. Right. And now you have time-lapse of a scoop of ice cream melting with food color, and no two scoops of ice cream melt the same way. No two colors mix the same way. So you have a unique ice cream time lapse for each experiment that you do. And some of them can be inordinately colorful and inordinately beautiful to look at. So somebody said, well, that's a very stupid kind of thing to do. And I said, no, it isn't. Think about it this way. How many artists are doing acrylics by pouring? They pour different colors onto a canvas. They spin the canvas. They rotate the canvas. They push and pull the paints with hair dryers and blowers and things like that. This is creating that same art for you, but in a movie. It's creating that art visually as it happens, as it transpires. So then they kind of then look at you and say, yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, this is interesting. And there is an individual who has made this as a part of their artwork. So they melt ice cream with different colors, take a time lapse of it because they want to see how it happens. But the end result becomes an actual photograph that is their art. And of course it's their art. I mean, they created it. So that's one good way to start if you want to learn. And then you can get into more complex types of time-lapse where there's variability, and the variability of exposure is problematic. And we in time-lapse terms call it the holy grail of creating time-lapse. And that's really where you set your camera up to take a time lapse of a sunset or a sunrise, where with, you know, passage of time, there are other things that are changing. The intensity of light is changing, either, you know, going up or down. So you have stable light, then you have variable light, and then you have stable light again. And you have to make it all look very natural. And that's really where this term comes in to create a holy grail of time lapse. And of course, you know, there've been, I did one where I'm sort of, I was actually very happy with it. I was in White Sands Monument in New Mexico. And I created a time lapse of the, you know, full moon setting and then the sun rising, which was coincidental very early in the morning. So you have, you know, a moon set and then a sunrise. And this is a double whammy holy grail. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's something that you know, can sort of challenge you. And there's a lot of time lapse that is, in fact, very challenging, but worth it.
Yeah. You know, I just think that you just simplified it in such a great way. And that thought that it might be so that you reveal something, but it might be just that you did it for an aesthetic, artistic reason. And I love that thought. And that's a good way to start thinking about why you might do time lapse. You don't have to have a fundamental question. You just have to have something simple that's going to be varied. I love the idea, though, when you're thinking about how the technical part of a camera works. We've made them so automated, and you're right, that if each of those frames, it refocuses, does the end result end up being a blur because it's refocusing? What happens?
Well, it's not so much a blur. It's just very distracting because every frame will appear to have motion that it doesn't need to have.
Right.
So the focus is shifting. You get this flickering, or you get this jerkiness. And, you know, when I mentioned to you earlier that you need to have control as much as possible of all the elements of your camera. You know, we believe that just because we spent $6,000 or $5,000 or whatever the money is that you spent on buying a high-end camera, that it is accurate. Be rest assured, it's not. I mean, when your camera, and in terms of, you know, camera speak, if you have an f-stop, or you set your aperture to f8, or you set your aperture to f16, for every image that is captured, the shutter blades open wide, and then they close down to the aperture that you have set before the photograph is taken. And it's a mechanical device. Those shutter blades are mechanical. They're not, you know, by some, you know, strange means, an electronic, you know, aperture. So being mechanical, the first time it may close down to F8 correctly, but the next time it might be F7.9, and the next time it might be F8.1. So those slight variations in aperture will cause variations in the exposure captured. And that results in what's known as flicker. Because if light changes, it's flickering. That's why we, you know, have flicker, because the exposure changes. So that's a problem. And very little you can do to overcome it unless you use a lens that has a manual aperture that doesn't open and close each time that you're going to use it. So, you know, you want to go as manual as possible. People say, well, yeah, but then we still have some flicker. Yes, of course, because your shutter is also, you know, mechanical.
Doing the same thing, right.
And unless you have now the fully electronic shutters where they've been able to, you know, get your shutter speed to be very accurate. But with the old mechanical shutters, they weren't accurate. And now add on top of that, if you've got automatic, you know, focusing setup, you've got a plethora of things that are changing with each exposure. And you don't want that. You want consistency.
Right. And especially if you're looking at something that is a little bit itself moving over time, right? Something starts to bulge out or whatever, like in the flower growth, right?
Right.
That refocusing is a real problem because the camera's going to go, maybe I need to be back here and maybe I need to change the aperture. So this idea of fully automatic is okay for some things, but it sounds like fully automatic for this is not a good thing.
Well, for your audience, there's one other very, very important factor that you have to take into consideration is that we tend to, in photo speak terms, go in tight. right? So if I want to take a picture of a ring, I want to go in as close as possible and fill the frame with the ring. Or if I'm taking a picture of any object, I want to fill the frame with that object. But with time lapse, you want to be cognizant of the fact that, as an example, this flower is going to bloom and is going to go from bud to flower. And it's going to take 12 hours to do that. And you set up your camera nice and tight on the bud, and it blooms. And the edges of the flower are all gone because they exceeded the size of your frame. So
that's really important. The other is, as I think about it, the plant is still growing, so the flower may move up, you know.
Correct.
Right. So you may actually have the bottom of something that you had in there. That makes
right. sense. So one of my early time lapses, I actually, it was this time of year, you know, but nearly 10 years or 12 years ago, that I had I bought a tulip from the florist, and the tulip was in a pot and it was bud, you know, had my camera focused on it. And, you know, tulips don't bloom in a day. Tulips take days to bloom. And in the days of blooming, I had this all set up in a bedroom, closed all the doors, had artificial lights, and made sure that everything was constant. And after 3 days, when I recompiled my video, I had this beautiful tulip. It bloomed, and then it grew, and it grew, and it grew, and half the tulip was gone from the top of the frame. And there was, you know, 3 days worth of work totally wasted because I did not anticipate where the end was going to be. So, you know, a good lesson is anticipate the end before you decide you want to do the time lapse, because the end may be at a point very different than where you started.
So that's really important for all photography, which is the idea of you need to observe a little bit the setting, right? You need to, I mean, I think photographers forget, you need to kind of observe what's happening in the whole setting. And then you frame it up.
Because what could potentially happen.
Or what could, yeah. I mean, was something going to fly in there? Right. And so, yeah, you're always trying to figure out something that, but it's really critical in what you're talking about, and that whole thing of not tightening in on what the smallest thing is, but what might be the biggest thing.
Correct.
Right. And so where might this thing go is an interesting one. You know, if it wilts, then you've got the opposite problem. You know, then you've got it going out of the frame downwise. And so
That's an easier one to handle because you typically are not going to go wrong. Right. You know, I mean, something is sort of disintegrating or something is collapsing.
Yeah, falling apart.
It's easier to deal with than something
when
that's growing.
Growing. Yeah. So fascinating. Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists and scientists and members of the community to engage in conversations that explore the intersections between art and science. We want you to explore at home just like we are and have conversations about this, but go out and experiment. Take Shiv's idea of playing with ice cream and some food coloring. Go ahead and take your camera or your smartphone and see what you can create, and remember about the ideas and tips that he's given you on how you see and how you plan. And we'll be right back.
No alarm clock. No traffic to negotiate. No staff meetings to attend. Sunday is your day, so do yourself a favor, tune out all that noise and tune in for Sunday Baroque.
Sunday morning from 5 to 9 here on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. I'm having a conversation with Shiv Verma, an author, photographer, artist, educator, who's actually earned numerous awards and recognition nationally, internationally, for his work in time lapse photography and time related photos, but you also do workshops and you do education. But I'm really curious, and I think our audience would be, when did you start doing photography, and then when did you really get into time lapse?
Okay, well, that's I don't want to give away too much, but I'm not young. So I've been, let's see, I started photography seriously when I was about 13 years old. I was in a boarding school where we had opportunities to do lots of different extracurricular activities, and the school actually had its own dark room, and we were free to go use the dark room. So cameras didn't fascinate me. The end result fascinated me. I mean, I was always intrigued by the fact that you could freeze something that happened in time and keep a record of it as it was when it happened, or the moment that it transpired. And that kind of stuck around in the back of my head as I aged. And taking images was a lot of fun. You can't see me, but I have a long nose, and my long nose prevented me from doing a lot of work in the darkroom because I couldn't tolerate the smells. So I left a lot of the processing to my friends, and but the capture of those images was always, to me, the essence of capturing time was critical. And I have a little statement on my website. Basically, I look at photographs as something that allows me to eternalize that time. And if I can eternalize that time, I have been successful in what I intended to do. And I think that process of understanding the eternalization and understanding the value of capturing time led me to the whole concept of time lapse. That if you can capture one moment of time, why can't you capture lots of moments of time? And if those lots of moments of time can tell a story of what actually transpired, then that would make a lot of sense. And that's really where it all evolved from. And then it just was a natural progression of, how do you do it? And yes, I mean, I'm not the first one who's done time lapse, but the value proposition, the educational value of doing time lapse, all that started building up momentum in my system. And I was just, day and night, just experimenting and trying, and some of it was pretty miserable results, as my tulip that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And where you say, well, I've spent 2 days taking all these pictures, and funnily enough, back then we were just about getting into digital cameras, but even with digital cameras, the whole thing of I'm wasting my shutter count. I'm taking hundreds of images and I get nothing out of it. And I've just wasted 1,000, shutter count. So it was things like that. But then, you get over it and you start, getting better at planning. And I think a lot of time lapse is good planning and visualizing the end result more so than the process that allows you to create the kind of time lapse that you really set out to do in the first place. So in a nutshell, it's everything to do with eternalizing time.
Yeah, what a great point. And I love the idea in physics that time might just be something that we created as humans. That it might not even actually exist. And there's always a whole lot of things about time. But to me, I think time fascinates us as humans, and that idea. And when we think about things, I know you do some things with stars or things that are out in space. when we think about that, we start to get really weird with time, because people don't realize that some of the things we see, like a certain star, may be literally millions of years old, the light. So it may not even be there anymore, which is a really hard thing for us to understand, that it took millions of years for that to get to our eye and be captured by our camera. And so time is an interesting, time for humans, I think, is a really fascinating topic, which is why I love it.
Well, as is light. And this really is a combination of the two. Yes,
it is. I would assume, speaking of light, I would assume that when you're doing time lapse, controlling light is one of the other things you want to try to do, right? Do you want to try to at least illuminate something so it isn't going to dark and as over?
Well, that's one factor that you have to take into consideration, is to, you know, make sure that you have consistency. And if there is change, that change is very smooth. It's you want to normalize it. You don't want it such that it looks obviously like something happened. But and you know, you can get into more detail about how to do it. And there are devices available that will allow you to ramp the exposure so that it looks natural. I mean, you know, intervalometers are one tool. There are other tools like bramping devices. That's known as, you know, bulb ramping. It's where you make the transition from, you know, day to night, or night to day, or dark to light, and worst, you know, the converse of that, in a very smooth visual transition that doesn't look obviously, you know, jerky or
right.
So yes, of course.
Wow, that's great. I want to thank you, Shiv, for giving me so much time, and so our audience so many great ideas and things that they can do. And I hope that each of you at home will explore some of the work that we had. Until next time, I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you to tune in again when we explore more curiosities from the intersection of art and science.
You've been listening to Intersections, where art and science meet, with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversation that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you to explore further in conversation with others. Any of the ideas explored in today's show at www.thedaVinciPursuit.com.